Hello, everyone, and welcome to Off Track. For those tuning in for the first time, a big welcome to you. What is Off Track all about? It's just me. It's me talking about the episode, about the guest. It's fully improvised. There's zero script. And I talk about things that are important insights that really resonated with me on the previous episode or generally what's going on in the world. For those who are listening for more than the first time, thank you and welcome back. Right, today, what am I talking about? I'm talking to you about the amazing, wonderful, incredible episode I had with Sasha Jaffrey, world-renowned Sasha Jaffrey, the same guy that did a 17,000 square foot painting and set a Guinness World Record for a painting called Journey of Humanity that was sold for around $62 million. He painted it for over 20 hours every day for many, many months. This is the same Sasha Jaffrey who has sold paintings to King Charles, to the likes of Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Madonna, Guy Ritchie, and the list just goes on and on. First thing I have to say is Sasha Jaffrey is not what I expected him to be. I was expecting someone a little bit more pretentious. I was expecting someone a little bit more flamboyant. What I got was a really down-to-earth, grounded human being that absolutely had his head screwed on in the right way. And I really, really enjoyed my time with him. And I felt there was a lot of similarities in terms of our background, in terms of boarding school and public school that we both attended to, and the general sort of love of certain things, cricket being one of them. I know people in the Middle East don't really understand cricket, but if you're from the UK, it makes a lot of sense. So I really enjoyed the conversation I had with Sasha. He's a very, very nice guy. And I was expecting to talk a lot during the episode. You know, when you first meet someone, you've always got this expectation of what the episode's going to be about. I thought it was going to be about the art world. I thought it was about, you know, the genius behind his creativity, about his process, and how potentially some of us may be able to draw some inspiration to apply that to our, you know, our daily lives, to our work, to our careers, etc. But the episode ended up being more about a sort of a diary of, not of a CEO, a diary of humanity about, you know, what is the blueprint needed for us to become more human in the future? And that's really, it really resonates with him. And again, he's, for those who know him quite well, they wouldn't be that, you know, surprised by what I'm saying. But for those who don't know him well and just see him for the art and the flamboyance and the color, what sits behind him is a really, really interesting soul. So yeah, it was a great conversation. A lot of the conversation sort of was hitting on two or three different touch points. So I'm going to touch on them now, and I'm going to give you my two cents about it. So we did talk a little bit about art. We talked a lot of he talked a lot about it being all smokes and mirrors. For those who don't know what that means, it basically means it's full of bullshit. It's very corrupt. And that it's a very controlled marketplace where you basically have four players, and you could probably name two or three of them that are controlling, in terms of, I'm talking about art galleries, who are basically controlling the marketplace. That there's a lot of corruption that goes on. And basically what it's all about is that they create the value for the art, and they sort of manufacture the market. They start building in the value in a very controlled marketplace. And it's used to also launder a lot of money. I mean, he was talking about it's been used for hundreds of years as a very simple way of being able to hide and sort of launder your cash through art. Because again, how do you put a value on a piece of art when it's completely subjective? So we talked a little bit about that. My two cents on that is, yes, art has long been a very easy way to hide, to blend, to launder. And that will continue, I'm sure, no doubt. NFTs also started doing that to some degree as well. We did talk about NFTs and fractionalization, which is basically taking a piece of art and cutting up into little pieces and selling that off at a higher profit. But there will always, wherever there's money, is going to be corruption. I think that was kind of the key sort of take out from that perspective. And then obviously I fully agreed. But it was quite interesting about the monopoly of dominance. especially when it comes to the art gallery world. And what he did is he went rogue from a very young age and didn't really work with galleries and sort of created his own sort of market where he controlled the demand and the supply. He would paint only a certain number of paintings, and then he would only sell a certain number of paintings, and he would always retain some for himself as well. And there was a model that he created, which was great. It was amazing. So there is a way in which you can sort of avoid going down the trodden route of any industry, thinking that there is a complete monopoly. You can do try it yourself. It's not going to be easy. He's been painting for over 28 years. He hasn't had it all great, but you know, it was an interesting learning. But really, the other key learning, you know, from a slightly negative perspective, was the charity work, right? So he does a lot of charity, and I kind of asked him the question about charity work, and he said that, you know, for every good person in charity, there is 1,000 bad. That was literally his words. And that was kind of mind blowing. So I asked him some stuff about, you know, how much of the proceeds we actually donate actually end up being given to the end, you know, recipients, the people that actually need it. And he said, look, a lot of the time it doesn't end up. Sometimes it does. It depends on the charity. And he's got a pretty good radar when it comes to being able to spot someone who is in it for themselves or who's actually generally in it to help other people. You know, and he basically made me feel, because we do a lot of charity work, my wife specifically does a lot of fundraising to help out families that need the support, particularly in Lebanon. And you know, we always get asked the question about how do we make sure that the money that we're receiving and what my wife is receiving with her partners is actually being delivered. And we do our best to showcase the photos, how the money's used to help improve people's lives. But, you know, from his perspective, he's talking about millions. I mean, millions and millions of dollars that every single year are basically lining individuals' pockets and not going up to the end recipient. If you add that all up, all the different charities globally that he's not even involved in, I mean, it just makes you think. And he said, look, the world is extremely corrupt. There is corruption everywhere, but there are still some good eggs. That wasn't his words. Those are my words. And I do believe that. I've seen, you know, I feel like you can pretty much judge someone within a few minutes whether or not they have relatively pure intentions or they're just literally in it for themselves. And I've seen this firsthand. I've had people come on my show and said, oh, Luca, the show's amazing. I love the content. I love the questions. They don't obviously sound like that, but and then they promise to help. They promise to say, look, we're going to connect you with 123. We're going to help get you some investments and fundraising. We're going to do the X, Y, and Z for you. And then I hear crickets. And not the type that you play on a field, the crickets that sound. You basically, nothing happens. And, you know, you get a little bit disappointed. But then there are some people that come to me and say, look, I'm going to help you do 1, 2, 3. And they actually do it. And over the last year, I've sort of seen that firsthand. I'm not talking about charities here. I'm talking about specifically human beings. If there is something in it for them, they may help. If there isn't anything in for them, they're very, very unlikely to. But those that do, those are the good eggs. Sasha keeps only 20% of the money that he makes from selling a painting. 80% goes to charity. I mean, that's phenomenal. And he basically says he only makes money so he can continue to paint. It sounded a bit kind of, you know, a little bit, okay, that doesn't seem quite right. And 20% of millions of dollars is still a lot of money. But you ask anyone to give away 80% of their earnings to a charity. I mean, that's astonishing. And the whole conversation, like the episode was an hour and 20. It was one of the longest episodes I had. It's because I was so enthralled by his spirit, his soul, the way he sees the world. It was just incredible. He talks a lot about, so now we're moving into some more positive sort of areas. So he talked a lot about the importance of, you know, we create, and he creates from a position of surrender, and that basically it's all about borrowing a moment, and that it's for him, you know, it's like he has this gift, but it's about borrowing it only for a certain while to give it back to the world. And, you know, his whole process was kind of inspiring about how he actually paints. He basically goes into a meditative state and he draws inspiration from his life. So he tries to live such a full and rich life that will then sort of channel into the painting, that work that he does. Now, whether you believe him or not, that's regardless, but that's what he does. And I've seen it firsthand. I've been to his studio. I've seen him actually paint in front of Sadhguru and a bunch of other people. So I can see his style, and he is very much a genius. He's extremely creative. But what I loved most about him really was his outlook on certain things. And we talked a lot about the mental health crisis. And it's the biggest issue right now is mental health in the world. And the future generations of people and kids who are growing up with so much trauma. You know, we touched on the education system saying only 2% of the curriculum is focusing on mental health. And the remaining is still talking about the old stuff. And he's saying, look, all of us have trauma, but yet we are still not, even in 2025, acknowledging the fact that we need to sort of fix ourselves. We need to look inside. And that he was calling upon the education systems to really help, you know, become that bastion. I love that word. Of safeguarding of mental health, especially with young kids. He said, imagine everyone sort of sat in silence for 7 minutes. How much better would the world be if everyone would look inside for 7 minutes, go quiet, help you connect, get into that sort of state of surrender. It would make the world a much richer place. We talked a lot about love. We talked a lot about how it's misunderstood, and that really, you know, for him, love is about no hierarchy. And it's about respect, it's about empathy, and it's ultimately a selfless act. And it sort of encapsulates everything. And you have to become love. It's not something that you basically you give. You have to become it himself. But the real juice for me was his when he was talking about children and the dangers of kids if they're not managed properly. And this is what really sort of struck a chord with me. He was saying that kids are basically born with magic. You know, and that the sort of as they get older, they lose that magic. And it's our job as parents, as adults, to help keep that sort of inner child alive. Because, you know, if you're able to sort of get closer to our inner child and be that sort of, you know, that person who had dreams, who had passions, who had aspirations, who wanted simple things, there'll be so many less problems in the world. And then he gave this fantastic analogy. Of imagine four kids playing in a sand pit, right? Age between 3 and 7. And all four kids were different races, different religions. And he said, the kids would only ask two questions to each other in the sand pit. They'd be thinking themselves and asking, are you kind? And will you play with me? That's it. There's only two questions he said that they would ask. Now imagine you're an adult and you're in a sand pit. It's a strange one, I know, but imagine you're an adult and you've got three other people with you, different races and religions. How many questions would you be wanting to ask them in your own mind? And he was basically saying that kids really can teach us. You know, we don't realize what we have inside and we kind of move away from it. But, you know, that childlike innocence is the most important thing to try and retain. But not only that, because it will allow you to kind of thrive. Because kids have magic. Kids have imagination. Kids are the ones who are able to dream, you know, and they come up with crazy stuff or beautiful stuff, whatever you want to call it. But yet we are then told that we have to avoid that and we have to grow up and we have to become serious and we have to sort of get into the system. You know, and he's got two kids himself. I've obviously got two boys, and you could see the look on his face about how much he's trying to always connect with his own inner child. So that will allow him to keep feeling that creativity and allowing him to thrive. And then, you know, I was telling him about the whole, you know, me as a parent, how worried I am about my children. I want them to become the best versions of themselves when they grow up. And he made it really simple. He basically said, all kids want, Luca, all they care about, all they really need is to feel safe, is to feel loved, and to feel brave. And if you can give them those three things, they will thrive. They will continue to have the creativity spark and the imagination and the passion to keep doing what they want to do and to enjoy themselves long into their adulthood. And, you know, we are always obsessed. I mean, I'm definitely obsessed about giving my kids X and Y and Z. And, you know, I'm overthinking so many things about, you know, how to discipline them and how to treat them in a certain way and how they should see others, which is all important. But the brave bit was something that I hadn't really thought about. It wasn't something that was sort of top of mind. And when he said it to me, it just made total sense. I had kind of like had this euphoric moment where as a kid, I was always scared. I'd never had any bravery. I would always play it safe. I would always want to avoid the spotlight. I never really wanted to stand out, and I just wanted to blend in. I was at a boarding school, and for me, it was about surviving. It was about keep your head down and get on with it. Don't draw too much attention to yourself. Don't try and be you, whatever that version of me was back then. And it's something that really resonated with me, because it was only since I started to look inside myself. I've done a lot, like I mentioned in a few other episodes, if you've been listening, that I've done a lot of work and sort of self-reflection through theta healing, that I've started to realize that I've had a lot of childhood trauma, and that every single day with the sessions that I've been having, I do feel more complete, more full as a human being. And I've started to heal those traumas, and I feel much braver than I ever did. I mean, here I am, you know, I've got a bloody podcast, and I'm talking to you guys, you know, by myself, listening to the sound of my voice, sharing some things. So I've only now started to rediscover who I once was. And that's the message that I've really been trying to give to my children, is I want them to not feel scared. I want them to express themselves. And if everyone was able to sort of not have sort of this constant fear in the back of the mind, anxiety, it would really reduce the issues around mental health, and it would make everyone feel, or elevate everyone's feelings to a state of, you know, they can actually create happiness. They can actually enjoy life without constantly having to worry, have that high state of anxiety and even borderline depression and loneliness. So it was the whole butterfly effect of teaching your kids these three things, or giving them these three things as a child, really resonated with me. So that's why I'm going to leave it today. I really am going to take the lessons from Sasha. I want my children to grow up, to feel that they can and should follow what they want. They have the bravery to do it, and I will try my best to support them. And I think that's such a key learning for me this week. I did learn a little bit about Art. He did enjoy some of my questions, which is always quite nice. I did go to his gallery. I did see some of the amazing work that he did. But honestly, guys, I'm not an art person. I mean, it doesn't really move me. I would love to tell you and sit there, I look at a painting, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Art has never done anything for me, but that's okay, because that's just who I am. I can be creative in different ways, and I can see creativity in different ways. I still appreciate it, but it doesn't mean that I love it. So on that note, thank you guys for listening. I'm really looking forward to next week's episode, and I have a few little surprises also coming, which I will talk about more next week. So until then, have a wonderful week. If you do have kids, just think about how you can teach them a bit more bravery. And if you do like art and you are continuing painting and doing the stuff that you love, then bravo to you. I'm only just started to do that now, and I've absolutely loved every single minute of it. All right, guys, see you soon.